4. There had been a delay while a technician changed the cartridges in the atmosphere projector. The emissaries, seeing that Johnny was again about to speak, settled down. "My lords," said Johnny, "I do appreciate your indulgence in permitting me to clean up the remaining bits of this odious Tolmep matter. Indeed, I'm impressed by your patience. I assure you we may soon be able to proceed with the legitimate concerns of such an authoritative group." The influence of the polite instruction discs of the Chinkos was coming in very handy now. These lords, except for the combatants, were definitely on his side. Johnny stood tall in the mine spotlight. His buttons flashed. The dragon on the helmet seemed to move as he turned his head to Lord Slime. "Tolmep," said Johnny, with disdain and contempt in the word, "I have some views that were taken while the conference was verifying credentials. I'm going to ask you to identify certain things for me." Slime sat back easily, quite composed now.
"Go ahead, devil," he said almost airily.
Johnny looked at him closely. What had caused this sudden calm? Was it just an exhibition of diplomatic supercontrol? Slime was, after all, a clever and well-trained diplomat. With a deft touch of switch buttons, the mind spotlight went off, and a new view appeared, filling all the empty space in the room to Johnny's left. It was a remarkable shot. The emissary sat up and peered, very interested. There, just as though seen from the port of a spaceship, bright and clear, projected in three dimensions, upon the empty air, was the whole system where the Tolmep planet rode in the ninth ring. The huge combination sun, a double star with the small companion circling the larger orb, shed its double-shadowed light upon the vast system of planets and their moons. The name of the system was Batafor in the cyclo-coordination books, Sirius or the Dog Star in the ancient man constellation charts. "Is this Batafor?" Johnny asked Lord Slime. The Tolmep laughed.
"If you took the shot, you should know what it is. Why ask me?"
Johnny searched out the Hoven in the second row with his wand as a pointer. Perhaps the regal emissary of the Hovens might care to assist us. "Is this the Batafor system?" The Hoven had been regretting his involvement in all this for some time. His nation was a traditional enemy of the Tolmeps, and had suffered much in times past from their slave raids. He had begun to suspect that there were penalties and reparations coming up sometime soon. This spirit of Earth seemed to have been taking pains to exclude the other combatants, and he had seen a possibility of escaping censure if it all went wrong here, as it definitely seemed to be doing. Best curry some favor. He could see no danger in it. He rose and came forward, and Johnny handed him his wand with the pointer beam turned on. The Hoven waved the beam generally across the system.
"I recognize under test this is indeed the Batafor system. That is the old cyclo name. We locally call the double sun Twino, which stands for mother and child in the Hoven tongue."
He tapped the planet ring nearest the sun.
"This is Jubo, uninhabited due to its extreme heat and gravity pulls."
He pointed rapidly to the second, third, fourth, and fifth rings.
"These have names but are not important. Uninhabited, for they are subject to earthquakes and volcanic upheavals."
He tapped the sixth ring, the planet almost hidden behind the double sun.
"This is Tortut, a cyclo-mining planet. It had a population once, but they were annihilated."
The Hoven looked inquiringly at the Hockner.
"My lord, do you mind if I go on?"
The Hockner shrugged, then gave a strained laugh.
"As you have already as much as said so, my dear colleague, you may tell them it is a possession of Hockner."
"Very good," continued the Hoven. "This seventh planet is Holoban, part of the Hockner Confederacy. The eighth planet is Balor, one of our own Hoven planets."
He lowered the beam and looked at Lord Slime. But Lord Slime simply shrugged and said,
You make a very fine astronomy lecturer, Lord of the Hobbins. You have omitted some of the fauna and flora, but go ahead.
The Hobbin put the pointer on the ninth ring.
And this, I can attest, is Tallnep.
He peered more closely.
Yes, these specks about it are the five moons, though one is hidden from this angle. Tallnep is remarkable for its moons in a system where planets seldom have more than one. The reflective quality of these moons is a bit remarkable due to their composition. The double sun can give out the normal light spectrum, but on reflection from these moons, the light shifts upward in the spectrum. The Tallnep civilization prefers to work by moonlight and normally sleeps in the direct sun. It is said they are not indigenous.
Oh, spare us, spare us, said Lord Slime. You will be telling us about Tallnep egg mating next. Keep it clean, Harvin.
Some of the uninvolved emissaries laughed. Slime was wriggling his way back into their good graces.
The tenth planet, the Harvin went on, is a cyclo-mining planet, Tung. The population existed once, but had actually been removed by the Tallneps before cyclo-occupation. The 11th...
Thank you very much, Lord of the Harvins, said Johnny. You have been very helpful. The Harvin stepped down and would have gone back to his seat, but Johnny checked him. Johnny hit another button. A clear view of the city magically appeared in the air. It was just as though one were suspended in space well above it.
That is Creeth, said the Harvin, the Tallnep capital, very distinctive. See how the streets wind their way and entwine.
He came back up and took the pointer.
This is the House of Plunder, their legislative center. See how its sections wind around and come back together, unmistakably Tallnep in its architecture. This is Grath, their famous combined public park and slave auction center. This rock hill with the holes in it.
Thank you, said Johnny. And now, this is what I really want you for. He pushed a button and the picture changed. It swooped down at the park and gave the emissaries the feeling they were free-falling in space. The park stayed still, but all the surroundings swooped sideways and away, making it look for a moment like a bowl. The camera had steadied. The view now showed just the park. One could see the long slave auction blocks, the comfortable seats and boxes for the buyers. But what was remarkable was the huge clock face laid out in the hill at the edge. The clock, said Johnny.
Ah, yes, the clock.
The Harvin sighed and glanced at Lord Slime, but his lordship was sitting there, a smile on his mouth below his glasses, fingering his scepter.
The clock is built of slave bones, it is said. Huge masses of them have been inset into wheels that turn and show through the windows. It is said that 58,000 female slaves were killed to make up the border, you see.
I meant the time and date, said Johnny. They are in Tallnep script, and I suppose you read it?
Ah,
said the Harvin, glad to be off the hook. He was afraid Lord Slime might rip into him.
The hour, the date. Why, yes, I do know the Tallnep number system. This was taken about 2 hours ago.
He glanced at his own watch.
About 1 hour and 51 minutes ago, to be exact. Remarkable. Was it taken with the teleportation rig out there just today?
He stared at it.
Must have been.
I do thank you, said Johnny. He took the pointer from the Harvin lord, who then stepped down, casting a somewhat fearful look at Slime. Johnny hit another button. Into view flashed the Tallnep planet and its five moons. It was remarkably detailed. Lord Slime, said Johnny, is this the Tallnep planet and its moons? Slime laughed.
It wouldn't do me any good to say no, would it? Yes, devil. It doesn't take an astronomy professor like our friend the Harvin here to detect that that is Tallnep and its five moons.
He laughed easily. "Very good," said Johnny. "Then, as a native of Tallnip, and someone undoubtedly fond of its moons, could you tell me which moon you like best?" This sudden dive sideways made Slime wary. He was only giving it half his attention. There would be a while before the fleet could arrive, he supposed, but they might send a scout racing ahead. He glanced at his watch. He fingered the bottom of the scepter. He was preoccupied with how to get these emissaries outside so both they and the guards could be all taken in at one twist of the scepter bottom.
"Well," said Lord Slime, "I'm afraid I have better things to do at home than stand around gazing at moons."
"Which one of them do you like the least?" persisted Johnny.
"Oh, any of them," said Slime easily.
Johnny smiled. The dragon on the helmet flashed and seemed to move as he turned to the emissaries. "As Lord Slime has no preference," said Johnny, reaching out with the pointer beam, "we will choose this one, Aesart," and he tapped it with the light. "Notice the peculiar crater patterns, these five ellipses, that make this moon distinctive." A sudden chill hit Slime. Aesart. Covered under its surface were the huge shops and hangars of the entire Tallnep Navy. To this place, local freighters took the parts of space vessels, and on Aesart they were reassembled. The mighty non-atmosphere ships of Tallnep could not even take off from a planetary surface. Before every material or crew delivery, all the heavens were combed for hostile surveillance. Before every war vessel launch, surface-fired spy ships rose from Tallnep itself and scanned the skies. The function of Aesart was a hard-kept secret. How had this devil come upon such data? Or was it a lucky choice? Slime felt a crawling unease. And then, abruptly, any worry he had was dispelled. The devil with the strange beast on his helmet said, "Could I ask all your lordships to come outside? Seats have been placed for your ease, and there will be what I think you will find an interesting demonstration." He had just unwittingly solved Slime's problem. 5. Lord Slime was making very sure that he was the last to leave the room. He wanted nobody left in here. He had noticed that the room had a door and that it had a lock. By leaving last, he could quite naturally close the door and turn the lock. That would be one less door he would have to watch, and he could be certain that nobody lurked in this nearly soundproof room to see what would go on and leap out to surprise him. All the other emissaries filed out. As the one deepest in the room, it was natural that he be the last to leave. The devil had tagged after them, and he was gone. The small gray man had departed. But this confounded host. The elderly man in the fancy Chinese gown seemed to have accumulated some papers, and they were on the floor beside the chair where he had sat. Guest lists, of course. And one must have fallen back of the chair, for he was searching it out. He finally found it, and then stood there going over it, evidently rehearsing some hard-to-pronounce names. So Slime had to pretend that he had misplaced something and stood there going through his pockets and looking thoughtful. It was a bit of a strain waiting the host out. The man did not seem to notice him, but just stood there running a finger down a list and muttering. "Fine time to rehearse," thought Slime acidly. In another few moments his own delay would become noticeable. But he had to be sure this was an empty room, too soundproof. And it might have screens in it. He looked about. There was a device in one upper corner. Could it be a viewing device? Hard to tell. Bad light. This projector might also be a viewer. No, he better wait in case somebody should look in here. At last, the host moved with a sort of sailing walk up the aisle to the door, still muttering over his list. Slime went along right behind him. The Tallnep was almost to the door, was even reaching to close it, when the host stopped. Lord Slime, almost in the doorway now, eyes only for the door, was distracted by two technicians appearing, the same technicians who had set up the projector. They were rushing in to move it. The collision was sudden and violent. The scepter flew from Schleim's hand. A technician caught a glimpse of fangs right in front of his face and raised his arm. Unable to check its forward crush, the technician's heavy sleeve banged into Schleim's mouth. The reaction of a Tallnap was inevitable. He bit. He bit hard and repeatedly, hissing in rage as he struck. With a yell, the technician reeled back. He staggered away, holding his sleeve close to his body with the other hand, and vanished into another doorway. The second technician was chattering horrified apologies in some tongue. Chinese? He reached down and picked up a gold object from the floor and shakingly handed it to Schleim. Schleim gripped it. He felt the perforations at the top and the rings at the bottom. He straightened up his glasses and heaved a sigh of relief. At least the scepter was secure. The host was brushing him off with heavy, frantic apologies. The host took a second to gesture impatiently at the second technician, and only then did the hovering man go in and get the projector and wheel it out. Managing to hang back and seem offended, Schleim at last got the room empty and, without the concerned host remarking it, closed and locked the door. Schleim even pretended to limp a bit. He told the host not to mind, and he went to join the others. In the hospital, Dr. Allen and a nurse were getting the Chinese technician out of his jacket. They did it very delicately. Dr. Allen took the padded sleeve and, without touching it, cut it off the jacket and let it fall into a wide-mouthed jar. Drops of poison were visible on the cloth, oozing back up out of the padding. Dr. Allen looked at the arm. In Cyclo, he said, "Not a scratch, but a good thing we put the leather lining in. That was a brave thing to do, Chong Wan." The chief ignored his compliment. He threw down a thin knife and a small blast gun.
"He had the knife in the back of his neck and the gun in his boot. I thought we might as well have them, too."
"Are you sure he might not have had something else?" said Dr. Allen. "I don't want to patch up any more holes in Johnny than I have to."
"Nothing else," said Chong Wan, "unless he bats somebody over the head with that scepter."
"I am sure Johnny can duck that if it comes to a fight," said Dr. Allen. "This Lord Schleim is a very dangerous creature." He gestured toward the jar which held the sleeve. "Nurse, add that to our collection so we can develop some antivenin for it."